Good afternoon. Welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for joining us today. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might also be listening online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. We have Gene Bogart. He is one of the co-authors of A Golf Course in Miracles. First, there was A Course in Miracles, and now there's A Golf Course in Miracles. Welcome to the show, Gene.
Why, thank you, Marie. Great to be here with you. Wonderful to be connected to Vancouver. We're sort of diagonally at opposite ends of the continent. I'm in South Florida in America, USA, and you're in the northwest to us anyway. I know it goes farther north and farther west from there.
And I hear the radio voice. You have a radio show with Charlotte, your co-author, right?
Yes, we do a program on Blog Talk Radio every Wednesday night. It's 9 o'clock Eastern time, so adjust accordingly. It's called A Golf Course in Miracles, which should be obvious. Part of Charlotte and a few associates had formed a mini network within the Blog Talk sphere known as the Art of Living Well Radio Network. And so they have a variety of different programs with different hosts, and Charlotte and I host our program together on the Wednesday nights. But I have a background in radio from years ago. I'm originally from the New York area and did that for a long time. And, you know, But it's not like I sound this way because I did radio. I kind of did radio because I sound this way, because this is just how I am. I always tell people if I call up to order a pizza, you know, the guy will take the order and go, are you, like, on the radio or something? You know, so I can't, you know, hey, give me extra pepperoni with that. So, you know, I don't know.
Excellent. Well, that probably comes in handy.
Beautiful area of the country where you are. I was going to mention that a few years ago, we did a cruise with Gary Renard, you know, the author of The Disappearance of the Universe. He's a good buddy of mine. In fact, I produce and co-host the Gary Renard podcast series, a little plug for other work that we do. And the cruise was to Alaska, and we left from Seattle, and one of the stops was Victoria. And what a gorgeous city. Boy, was that beautiful. It was just, I had never been out that way before, and it is just stunning. So it's a really beautiful area of the world where you are out there. So hello, Vancouver. And can people in Victoria hear this as well?
Probably online. Yep.
They could hear us in Hong Kong online,
yes.
So that's not a problem.
Yeah, our little CITR signal doesn't stretch that far to Victoria. But
yeah, how far, mileage-wise, is that, or kilometer-wise? I'm not really, to me, they seem like they're in the same zone. I know they're not right next to each other.
Victoria?
Yeah.
Oh, I really have no idea. It's a bit of a ways. You have to take a ferry to get there.
Right, but I mean, it's a ferry ride, so it can't be, too far. It's, you know, a few hours or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty close.
I'm sure Vancouver is equally beautiful and considerably larger, I guess, right?
Yes. Fewer flowers.
What's that?
Victoria has more flowers.
Ah,
yes.
There were a lot of flowers. You're right. It was in the summertime we were there. There were many flowers. I'm glad you reminded me of that. Beautiful place. Boy, is it just gorgeous. Such nice people. We always say that. Americans always have that caricature of Canadian people. And in South Florida, we have a lot of people from Canada. And they're so nice and they're so polite. And, you know, it's true. I mean, when we were there, just everybody was so nice. I don't know what it is. What is it with you Canadians that you're so... I mean it totally as a compliment. What nice people. Just everybody we met was helpful and pleasant and nice. And it must just be great to live surrounded by that.
It is. It's probably because it's colder here, so you have to be nicer to people in case you have to rely on them to help shovel your walkway.
Well, remember, Marie, I'm originally from New York, where it's also cold, but I don't think the nice factor is quite up to Canadian standards.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. So, A Golf Course in Miracles. Gene, can you give us an overview for those listeners who aren't familiar? First of all, what is A Course in Miracles?
Well, A Course in Miracles is I would say it's fairly well known, certainly within the overall spiritual community. Pardon me, and I think that probably because of some of the larger exposure, Oprah Winfrey, for one, has had Marianne Williamson as another person that we have done work with and know. She wrote a book called A Return to Love, and that goes back, I guess that was in the late 70s or early, or somewhere in the 80s, I guess. I don't have the date on that, but that's been out for a while. And it really kind of laid out a lot of the basics of what A Course in Miracles teaches, and that helped to popularize it. The Course itself, A Course in Miracles, really is a, it's sometimes referred to as a course in spiritual psychotherapy. It's a self-study course. It's not a religion. It's not a church or anything associated like that. It is very spiritual, but it really is just dealing with our true spiritual nature, which is the reality of what we are, and our relationship to God, and God in the sense of our Creator. Some people are put off by that if they have a bad experience with the concept of God through previous religious teaching or whatever it may be. A lot of people feel that, well, you know, God is always this judgmental being and, you know, looking down on us and ready to punish us for everything, and they can't, you know, believe in that. The Course does not present God that way at all. It really presents God as the being and the power that created us and continues to create us. God did not create us and leave us separated. God creates us and continues to at every moment. And as the Course would say, and it gets into some deeper metaphysics in terms of the illusory nature of the universe, and the Course is not the only discipline that teaches that. That's pretty common in a lot of spiritual teaching. But that what we believe to be the physical world is sort of our illusory creation. Our reality is our spiritual reality, where we are one with God, which is what we are truly created as and sustained as. And in that, I know we're getting deep here, getting into Stephen Hawking territory. We are living in a state of eternity, really, where there is no time. It's always now. It's this never-ending expanse of being now. And the past, our memories that we have, it doesn't actually exist as a thing, nor does the future. The future hasn't happened. Again, it's anticipation. We're thinking about what might or will happen down the line. But the only reality is where we are right now. And certainly that's something we talk about, and we can talk more today in our book, A Golf Course in Miracles. Applying it to golf or any sport or any activity is that aspect of being in the zone when there are no distractions in your mind, when you're focused, and you know this when you go on the air. I had this as well, and I'm sure you do every time you do a program. You set aside the past and the future, and you focus on the moment that you're in. True of any kind of performance, if it's musical performance, a sporting event, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, whatever it might be. The great players always say, you know, when I'm going to take the shot with that puck, I don't think of anything else. It's like I only see that, and everything is focused there and right now. And that's that in-the-zone moment. And we actually can get closer and closer to experiencing only that in our lives all the time. And one of the great things that we think about our book, A Golf Course in Miracles, we always say it's not for golfers only by any means, because we use golf as a metaphor for everything, all of life's challenges. And golf's a pretty good game to use that as that symbolic representation, because golf is so different all the time. Every game of golf is different from the one before. Every course is different. A baseball diamond or a hockey rink, they have delineated dimensions that are always the same. You know, in baseball, yes, you know, the outfield changes, but the diamond in the main area of play is very strictly, you know, designed. It's 60 feet, 90 feet, whatever it may be metrically. Hockey, the same way. Any sport is like that. But golf is different. Every course is different, just like every day is different in our lives. So it became an interesting metaphor, the very idea of applying golf. The one reason that came up was that my co-author, Charlotte McGinnis, who unfortunately isn't with us today, she's still with us in the world, but she's not with us here in this interview. She's actually a golf pro. In addition to being a course instructor, in addition to being an ordained minister, Charlotte's work in the world is of a golf professional. So she can speak from the real authority position of golf, where I'm just a hopefully well-informed observer. And then we both speak primarily about the spiritual nature of things, which is the real focus of our book.
Lovely. Well, that just answered about 10 of my questions. So
once I get on a roll.
So I was actually going to ask you, I obviously Charlotte is a golf pro, but you kind of touched on why golf and not bowling or baseball.
Well, next time we may do a baseball diamond in miracles. I'm not sure how that'll work. I think I somehow envision a field of corn growing in the outfield. I think maybe this story has been done before. It really could be applied to anything. The reason this came up as it did, if you want me to go into a little history of the book and how it came about, because
yes,
that kind of ties into why golf.
Yes, please.
Well, see, there you are being polite, Marie. You
don't I'm so Canadian. Jeez.
Do the New York thing. Yeah, get on with it.
Have at her.
What happened was, it was a couple of years ago, now Charlotte and I have known each other for almost 20 years, and she was actually the person who introduced me in any serious way to the study of A Course in Miracles almost 20 years ago. She had been at it longer than I, obviously. And I can go into more of that later, but the point with this was, a couple of years ago, I just happened, she had mentioned to me, oh, check out I did some new stuff at my website, which is charlottemcginnis.com. So I went to check, and one of the things that she spoke about was her golf instruction, which she's still very active doing with select clients, I believe they say. And one was that she was talking about her concept of Zen golf. And I thought, wow, what a great topic, what a great way to phrase that, because I said with Charlotte's background in metaphysics and spirituality and her background as a professional golfer and golf instructor, Zen golf is like, ooh, that just sounded so cool, and it really would fit. And as I was kicking that around in my head, and very often I think that what happens is as you begin this kind of spiritual work, you find little input, little downloads come in, and I really believe that's the Holy Spirit connecting with us, and suddenly things come up, you're not thinking about it, this moment of inspiration just comes to you, seemingly from out of the blue. And the word inspiration means, or the root of it is from in spirit, so you become inspired, the Spirit speaks through you in a sense. And suddenly it just, this phrase popped into my mind because Charlotte and I both are so involved with A Course in Miracles. I'm thinking Zen golf, and I said, a golf course in miracles. Whoa, what a great title. And so I quickly Googled it and made sure nobody else had ever done anything. I said, no one's ever used that phrase before. It's completely unique. Thank you, Holy Spirit. So I emailed her and I said, I just had this great idea. We should do something along those lines because I'm always coming up with puns. And I thought, well, that would be it's a great turn of a phrase. And so she said, oh, yeah, that's great. Let me know if you have any other ideas. So I started getting little other things that would become our chapter titles, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a bit today. And they were funny. They were takeoffs on course teachings, but rephrasing them to have these golf concepts built in. So I'd email them to Charlotte, say, oh, those are great, and we'd get more and more. And eventually, she was the one who said, we keep talking about this. We should really write a book. I said, well, that would be a great idea, because, we will be able to talk about these rather deep Course in Miracles concepts, but present them in a lighthearted way, something that's very accessible to people. And we always said right from the beginning it would not be just for golfers. These will be concepts that anybody can relate to, and we'll apply the golf image or the golf metaphor and show how it also applies in business, in the boardroom or in a sales call or in a musical presentation or any other sport or whatever, relationships. It doesn't matter because the concepts work wherever you apply them. We're just using golf, that concept, as the springboard to take it from there. So one thing led to another, and that's how golf became involved with A Course in Miracles. And, as I say, I'm not much of a golfer. I used to play some. But I can tell you just from my short experience as a golfer that miracles are really, really needed by most golfers. They're praying for miracles all the time, even the pros. So it's a pretty good combination, we think.
All right, Gene. Well, thank you for giving us that background on A Golf Course in Miracles. It's time for a break, and when we get back, we're going to jump right into the book. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we're speaking today with Gene Bogart. He is one of the authors of A Golf Course in Miracles, and we'll be back with more Synchronicity in a flash.
Support the women of the Downtown East Side and spring into the Scotiabank Charity Challenge on June 24th. Join the Downtown East Side Women's Center in crowdsourcing funds and spreading awareness of their organization, which provides safe space, emergency shelter, basic essentials, and a continuum of support to marginalized women. Go to www.dewc.ca/run-4-dewc for more information.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
This is a repeat episode. Please be advised, references to date and time may not be applicable at this time. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and you can find me online at CITR.c. No, that's not me. That's CITR. My website is spiritualshow.com, and I'm also on Twitter as Marie Bernard. You can find me on Facebook, and you can also follow me on YouTube, where I sometimes make videos about gratitude, and sometimes I post some of my shows on YouTube as well. And the channel there is Spiritual Show. Are you on YouTube, Gene?
Yes, I am.
What's your channel?
I believe it's just under Gene Bogart. I think it's under the Gene Bogart channel, I believe. And also on Facebook, too, at Gene Bogart.
Wonderful.
Actually, at Gene Bogart is Twitter, but I'm at Facebook under the name Gene Bogart, so yeah. And people, as long as you're kind enough to bring it up, can go to genebogart.com, which is sort of my personal site, and forgiveness.tv is the site where we have a lot of our media stuff, including the Gary Renard podcasts and other stuff that's there, so those are the links. But I need to expand YouTube because, I have a little background in TV. I have more radio broadcasting in my background, but I did TV production for a while as well. So I should really capitalize on the YouTube more than I do.
The YouTube.
The YouTube to go on. It's one of the internets, I believe, right?
All right. So we're here to talk about a golf course in miracles. And I don't know anything about golf. I know what a mulligan is.
Oh, good, good.
Because I make mulligans in life all the time.
Well, that's one of our chapters.
Yes. So tell us now, the book is grouped into three sections of nine holes, right?
Right. Now, that seems confusing. What happened when I started kind of getting the spiritual downloads from the man upstairs with a lot of these titles, they were all takeoffs on teachings and lesson titles from A Course in Miracles with a golf twist. We'll read over a couple of them. Everybody loves the table of contents. People have said, you know, the whole book, if it was only the table of contents, that alone is worth the price of admission. So funny. So we originally came up with like 18 of them, and I'm thinking, well, that's great. We'll have like, it'll be like an 18-hole golf course. It'll be perfect. And we had the idea, instead of calling them chapters, we'll call them holes. So instead of chapter one, it'll be hole one, hole two, and we'll work our way through. But then we got more. More came in and said, oh, what are we going to do? They were too good to not have them. So we ended up with like, I was getting into the higher 20s, and Charlotte said, well, you know, being the pro that she is, she knew about this. She said, there actually are 27-hole golf courses. I said, what? And she said, yeah, well, what it is they have three groups of nine. They have the front nine, the back nine, and then what they call the third nine. Now, on any given day, that you only play 18. You play one group of nine and another group of nine. But a lot of people are at a resort. They're going to play the same course several days in a row. So you play the first and the second groups of nine one day. The next day out, you play the third nine and the second nine, and then you do the first and the third, and then, you know, so you can break it up, and but you're playing 18 every day, but it is a 27-hole course. And that was perfect. So we had 27 holes, and then we actually have a bonus one at the end, but it's not one of the holes. It's just a bonus chapter. We haven't figured out how to name that, so it's just 28. But that's just the wrap-up. That's our kind of epilogue that we have. But the 27 holes, you can play the entire course. You can play it nine at a time. You can just read a chapter at a time. All the chapters in this book kind of stand alone pretty well. So it's good reading, I think, in that sense, that it's not like a novel where you need to read it start to finish to get the whole picture. With this, you can read it incrementally, pick, you know, a chapter here, a chapter there. So they are linked, but they are also good as standalone chapters. And it's very funny that, you know, I want to let people know that this is a very lighthearted book, even though the subject area has some importance to it. I don't want to use the word serious because that has, you know, dour implications that A Course in Miracles would not tell us we would want to focus on. It's really the ego that wants us to take things seriously and, ooh, you know, oh, be afraid. You know, that's the ego speaking. Spirit always speaks of joy and of openness and releasing our problems. And, you know, A Course in Miracles really focuses so much on forgiveness. And in the sense of forgiveness as a complete letting go, a complete releasing of whatever it is that we're holding on to. So joy is a huge part of that. And so, you know, that is certainly reflected in our book. We're pretty whimsical. Whimsy is a good phrase to be using here. And so it's funny stuff. We make the serious points as well. So I think we've hit that balance well. in addition to hitting the balance between golf and non-golf. Non-golfers who have read the book so far have told us, you know, it's great. I was worried I wasn't going to enjoy it because of the golf stuff, and I don't care about golf. But I found that I was interested. You know, you really explain it, and you don't get into the deep stuff. It's easily explained, and I see why it works. And a few people have said, you know, I might even take up golf now. You make it sound so interesting, we're going to look into it. So it's a good metaphor that way.
So, Gene, now hole one is I need par, nothing. Par is when things are good, right? When you're perfect?
Yeah, well, I don't know if we could say perfect, but I would say that par is when things are really good and a really good expected outcome.
Okay,
that's what you want.
It's not all holes in ones, but it's good. It's a good score.
Right. A hole in one, I don't think on any course in the world would ever be a par. Because par is basically the score that you would be expected to get if you were a really good player, like a pro, and if everything went well.
Okay.
So I don't know a better way to phrase it than that, but if you can do par on a given hole, whether it's par three, par four, it's how many shots it takes for you to get the ball from the tee into that cup, into the hole. So if it's a par three, you're expected to have your first drive, and then the second shot that you take probably from the fairway would put you onto the green, and the third one would sink the hole, and that would, you know, or one way or the other, it should take you three shots to do that if you're a good player and if nothing goes wrong. So par is the standard that where you want to be. Now, if you had a really good hole and you got there in two shots, that would be a birdie. A birdie is one under par. And, of course, in golf, the goal is to get through the course in the least amount of strokes, because the better you are, the less times you'll have to hit the ball. If you're really lousy, you'll be hitting the ball a lot because it never goes where you want. So you want to keep the score low. So par would be, like, really good. If you were shooting par, boy, you're right, you're on spot. Now, though, as we said, if you got there in two, you had a great drive, and then that next chip shot, it rolled in and dropped in the hole. That would be two. So if it was a par three hole, you made it in two. That's a birdie. You're one mm-hmm. under par, which is really good.
So,
but now,
Gene,
Marie, here's the exciting part.
On hole one, the concept, the title is I Need Par Nothing. So
right.
With that, you're saying that you don't need to expect yourself to live up to what people say is the standard of expectation.
Right. And it's also separating yourself, being detached from the outcome in anything, and releasing that. All of our holes, as we said before, are kind of based on teachings or lessons from A Course in Miracles. One of the main lessons there is, I need do nothing, the course tells us. And what it basically is saying is we get very compulsive about needing to do things. I have to do this. Oh, it's important that I do that. I'll die if I don't do that. And what the course is saying, we don't really need to do anything. And it goes on to teach us what we need to do, the only thing, pardon me, is to be willing to turn ourselves over to the guidance of the Holy Spirit, literally the guidance of God. That will guide us. So the course says we need do nothing. We only listen and follow essentially the instructions that we get from our spiritual source. So, pardon me again. So our takeoff was I need par nothing. Yes, you're expected to do a par three or a par four or five on that other hole over there. And then people get all upset when that doesn't happen. Oh, I have, you know, I had a lousy shot and I got a six instead of a five. And that can ruin their day, ruin the game. Some people, you know, and if we expand it to other types of grievances in life, it can ruin people's lives. People carry toxic grievance and toxic anger forever in some cases, and certainly for years in many cases, or, you know, for long terms, when it could be just as easily let go, which is literally forgiven. So I need par nothing is saying, you know, it doesn't matter. Your experience is what you can be in charge of all the time. If you have a hole in one, well, that's wonderful. You can be elated. If you have a 10 and you were on a par three hole, you had the worst hole in the world, you can still be elated. You could still be extremely happy and at peace with that. So you'd like to par. If you're playing the game, you want to have a good score, but you don't need to. And we get into that aspect of needing to versus the detachment and being able to come at it from the observer's point of view.
Wonderful. So I'm wondering, shall we go over each hole, or is that giving away too much of the book?
No, we can do that. As I say, we haven't done this yet, but I think at our website, and let me just mention that, we creatively titled our website a golfcourseinmiracles.com. Who would have thought, Marie? Wow, I'll tell you. So it's a golfcourseinmiracles.com, or for those who are typing challenged as I am, you can also do agcim.com. It goes to the same place. And what we should do is post just the table of contents in its entirety so people can read that online, because, you know, it'd be nice to have people buy the book just to read that, but I think once they read it, they will be more likely to buy the book because they'll go, that's certainly the Course in Miracles people who are familiar with the course. When they've read this, they're cracking up saying, I can't believe those titles. They are so funny and so kind of insightful in a very humorous way. But I think, and from you were saying that you're familiar with the course, but you're not, involved in that sense. And yet you were finding these pretty interesting as well. So hopefully they work for everybody. But, yeah, we'll go through as many as you'd like here.
Okay, so hole two, my drive holds only what I swing with God. What does that mean?
Well, the course lesson that's based on is my mind holds only what I think with God. And it's a pretty deep topic. It's really dealing with the difference between the ego mind, which, and we all are constantly dealing with our two split aspects of our mind. We have the ego mind and then our spirit mind, which is literally the mind we share with God, the mind that is aligned with the Holy Spirit. So the ego mind is always the one that's speaking of fear, speaking of urgency. You have to do this now. It's so important. It's worry about the past, worry about what's coming up in the future. That's all the domain of the ego. The spirit mind is always telling us everything is okay. Take a step back. Open yourself to God. Open yourself to your spiritual source. And again, this doesn't, for anybody listening who, it doesn't have to be God in the religious sense. If you want to think of that simply as the force or my higher self or however you feel comfortable phrasing and envisioning that, that's what we're talking about here. And so the difference is here that my mind, and it's what the Course is telling us, that means our true mind, our real mind, holds only what I think with God, the thoughts I share with God. The other thoughts are the ones of the ego, and the Course explained to us that that's not actually our real mind. That's illusion. It feels like it's our real mind. That's one of the hard things to overcome in this kind of metaphysical study, is that, the mind I think with is not my real mind most of the time, and I'm learning to reverse that and realize that the mind that I really think with is the mind that I really am, the mind I share with my spiritual source. So my mind holds only what I think with that spiritual source, what I think with God. Well, ours becomes my drive, which is the first stroke on any given hole. You take your driver out usually and whack the ball off the tee. My drive holds only what I swing with God. So not only is that hopefully chuckle-worthy, but it also shows that any action that we take, we use the metaphor that the drive in a game of golf is what opens up the hole. And in fact, the drive on the first hole is the beginning of the entire game. So you can think of that as the beginning of a new day on earth, as we, whatever it is we're going to take on. When we begin something, that's our drive. That's the first opening action, the first opening thing that we do. If we do that with the ego, we're always going to be relating it to fear. We're always going to be kind of locked in the past, and we talk a lot about the past in the book, and the past is the domain of the ego. It's always telling us, remember what happened. Be careful now. Ooh, booga booga, look out. Where God is always telling us, be in the now, in that zone. And, one of the weird things is that with all of this, with all of the focus on the past as opposed to in the zone, once we can clarify this, it's not only helping us spiritually, but the wonderful side effect is it helps us here in the physical world as well. Because as in any sport or in any activity, when, as we said before, when you can be in the zone, in the moment of now, and not clouded by fears out of the past or worries about the future, you will do better now. You'll have a better outcome. So by letting it go, by letting your concern about this action go, you usually end up with a better action. That seems like a paradox, but it's very, very true. Because it's that being bound up with worry that causes you to have a lesser outcome here. And again, whether it's on a golf course, the hockey rink, or the boardroom, in a business meeting or going out on a date with somebody. You know, if you're all worried about, oh, the last time, oh, I had a lousy experience, oh, but you're never going to do well. But if you come in a fresh, clean moment of time where you're just in the now, think how better you relate to the person that you're with, or you relate to the client that you're dealing with, or the other players on the team, whatever the analogy is. So when your drive, your opening action, holds only what you swing with God, it's only what you put into action with your higher source right there with you, not being focused on the ego, you'll get a better outcome then, as well as elevating yourself on the spiritual path.
Mm. And now thank you for explaining that. And that sounds like it's related to hole eight. My mind is preoccupied with past strokes. But
right.
What I'm curious about is hole six. I am upset because I slice a ball that is not there.
Well, another one of the course's teachings, and the course is broken up into three basic sections. This is a Course in Miracles. There's the text, which is the lengthy section that really goes into almost the intellectual details of what's involved, the actual subject matter. There's also an area called the Manual for Teachers, which really is a place that answers a lot of questions that people might have to enable you to teach this to someone else or to teach yourself. The course is a self-study course, so we are both our own teachers and students simultaneously. And there's nobody that I know of who is strictly a perfect teacher of the course. And anyone, even someone coming in who's brand new as a student, they are also a teacher because they also have things to offer. Their questions will often be very instructive. So, you know, we tend to think we are, all of us, no different. We're all in the same boat. But the middle section of the course is called the Workbook for Students. And it's 365 lessons. They obviously are laid out to be done in 1 year. They don't have to be. You can take longer with it. But that is one of the great lessons there was I'm upset because I see something that is not there. And in our hole six, it becomes I'm upset because I slice a ball that is not there. A slice is not a good shot in golf for non-golfers. A slice, and to show you how little I know, it's a slice goes one way and the hook goes the other. And I always forget which. One of them goes to the left and the other goes to the right. And you want to go down the middle. So a slice or a hook is not what you want. But the concept we're getting into is the course's teaching, which we touched on earlier, about the metaphysics of the non-reality of the physical universe. And this isn't just a metaphysical concept. As you're probably well aware, modern quantum physics, the cutting edge of science, teaches us that the physical universe is not really there. Physical material is not actually hard. It's not material. When you get down into the subatomic levels, you find that these are just energy patterns that essentially masquerade as solid matter. And then when you take them even farther into the world of quarks and mesons and this crazy, you know, this really, really, you know, what's the stuff they do in Switzerland now with the Hadron Collider? It was in the Da Vinci movie that they had over there. But where they're breaking things down to particles that are so tiny, we almost can't imagine them. If you're not a physicist yourself, it's hard to even picture. But they're proving this stuff. It's not just speculation. And they show that these, you know, the energy patterns are not actually real. They vary depending on what the observer is looking for. When the scientist is looking for this to show up, where they look for it, they see it manifested. But if they look in the other option, they see it manifested over there, and they know there can only be one of them in this experiment. And yet, you know, so it seems to defy the laws of physics, and it certainly does defy Newtonian physics as we generally think about it. So the ball, in this case, in the golf metaphor, is not really there. It really isn't. There's something else involved, but it's not actually a physical solid ball. So why am I upset? When I think about it and expand these principles to it, I realize I'm all upset because this thing isn't going. And again, it could be a football, soccer ball, baseball, hockey puck. It doesn't matter. That thing that I want to go there, and it didn't go there, it went over there, and I'm all upset about it. And then I think that thing's not even there. This is something I'm projecting. This is an illusion that I have just taken to. And everybody accepts it as real, which is part of what gives it its seeming reality. We all agree. Here, I'm knocking on the desk in front of me. You know, boy, that's real. If I whack my hand hard enough, it hurts. You know, what's not real about that? But the truth is it's not. And science proves this now. So it's pretty interesting stuff. So we get into both the metaphysics of it at that level, but also the emotional level. Why are we upset? Why are we, because again, it's the ego. Why are we letting the ego tell us, here is something worthy of upsetting me? here is something worthy of disturbing my peace of mind. And the Course and Spirit would tell us, you are beyond that. Nothing is worthy of disturbing you. Your peace of mind is your right. It's what you deserve. It's inherent in what you are. And when you let anything disturb that, you, again, are following the ego's teaching. You're not following Spirit. So that's why I'm upset, because I slice a ball or have anything mess up in my life, because that's not really there. You know, the reality of what I am is based on love. It's based on my oneness, and it's just based on that detachment that we spoke about earlier. So that's why we are upset. And then it ties in with the other lesson where we talked about the past. My mind is preoccupied with past strokes. The other one right before that, our whole seven, the teaching from the Course is, I see only the past. And ours becomes, I see only the past in this sand trap. Just picking an obvious thing that people hate on a golf course, you don't want to get stuck in the sand.
Oh, everyone knows that, at least, right?
Well, there you golf. Go. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think golf is probably in our society, and really in pretty much all the world right now, everybody at least recognizes golf. Probably everybody knows who Tiger Woods is. Golf is very popular, I'm sure, in Canada, being a Scottish game in its origins, in Scotland, Ireland, England, you know, and nowadays it's big in Asia, Middle East. I mean, so golf, even if you don't play it, most people are pretty familiar with it. And, you know, the image of somebody driving a ball off a tee, putting on a green, trying to, you know, sink the ball into the hole, and being stuck in the dreaded sand trap. Charlotte has some very interesting things to say about that, because she actually is an excellent player in the sand. And she explains how people have all this fear, like, oh, I'm in the sand, it's all over for me on this hole. And she says she loves to play out of the sand. She says in some ways it's easier to achieve the shot you want out of the sand, because, you know, you can scoop under the ball in different ways than you can do off of grass. So in many cases, the sand, it gives you a superior advantage.
So,
but people don't see it that way, and it's, again, that preconceived notion and the fear and the past experience. That's what's poisoning your ability to see it right now.
Gene, that kind of sounds like the concept of when there's always people that take, when there's a bad situation or an economic downturn or something like that, there are always people that thrive out of that crap, and everyone else is worried and hoarding or just not doing very well. Is that what you're talking about by being in the sand?
That's part of it, yeah. I think that, you know, it's sometimes I think, and I'm really generalizing, and I don't mean to offend, you know, rich hoarders here, but sometimes we have that impression that people who hoard or people who profiteer during difficult times, and I guess there can be a nastiness. We all think of, you know, Mr. Potter in the It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart. You know, like, oh, he's buying and everybody else is selling. Well, you know, it's true when there's a run on the bank, when the stock market drops and people get all afraid and they sell their stock, somebody has to be buying it. You can't just sell stock to no one.
Mm-hmm.
You sell it and someone buys it. Who buys it? The person who's not afraid. That person says, I'm going to buy it now when it's half price, and then it will go back up. They are taking the risk, sure. You know, that's a little capital. Well, we take the risk, you get the reward. That's true. But they're doing it because, in that sense at least, they're not working out of fear. Now, oddly, there is a convoluted fear connection here, because they are benefiting from the fear of others. So in a once-removed kind of sense, they are still dealing with fear, but they're using it to their advantage. They're pivoting it to help them rather than selling it. So, it is very much like that in a way. And so, you know, we were going to say about the past thing. That, again, if people would look at that just using the stock market analogy, if you based it on past experience, yes, there have been huge, horrible crashes in stock markets and values, but they've always come back. Why would people fear? What is if someone sells all their stock at half price because they're afraid, are you simply afraid it's never going to come back, that the economy will never recover, in the history of humanity there will never be another good time? Of course not. I mean, the past would show you it's just the opposite of that. It always recovers. It may take a while. And I understand that, you know, people sometimes have to sell because they need the money right now to live on. I get that. I've experienced that. So I'm not saying that. But there are plenty of people who they have money put away. I'm just using this one example. They have it put away. A downturn happens in the market. They get scared and they just sell it because, oh, I don't want to lose everything. But they're not going to need it for a long period of time. And history would show you, the past would demonstrate, it's going to come back within that period of time. Why dump it now? But then there are those who at least get beyond the fear, and they say, well, I'll buy it. I'll take it over here now, and then when it comes back, I'll be the one who benefits. So, yeah, there are, as we said, these are not only spiritual concepts, but their application is very practical. And that's one thing A Course in Miracles says over and over, is that the Course is meant to be practical. We do have a higher goal that we're aspiring to and that we're moving towards. But in the interim, while we still seem to be here in the physical universe, there are very definite benefits in the here and now, what seems to be the here and now, that are only going to help us. So, that's the kind of the overriding thing, Marie, is that we're always looking at, you know, how does it help us now? Well, does it bring you a greater sense of peace? Does it give you a sense of joy as opposed to anger? Does it give you a sense of freedom as opposed to being locked into something and forced to do something? So those things, now those may be kind of intangibles in a way, but, to quote another film, you know, those intangibles are really the thing that's really worth anything at the end of the day. But as the Course would say, the practical benefits are there too. As we say, if you can get rid of those past thoughts that are blocking you in that sand trap, you'll make a better shot and you'll have a better outcome right now. So it applies right now as well as sort of in eternity or down the line.
Wonderful. Thank you, Gene. Well, it's time to take a break, so we'll be back in just a moment. We are speaking today with Gene Bogart. He is one of the co-authors of A Golf Course in Miracles. You can find them at agolfcourseinmiracles.com, and they also have a radio show online at Blog Talk Radio. So we'll be back. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
Tune in every Tuesday from 8 till 9 p.m. for Inside Out with your hosts AJK and Zia for exciting new dance music.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with us today. And we are speaking with Gene Bogart. He is one of the authors of A Golf Course in Miracles. Welcome back to the show, Gene.
Thank you, Marie. It's a pleasure to be here. I loved some of the music in the break there, that kind of old-timey radio spot that, with a theme going on there. And I love the old-time announcer. I can't think of the guy's name. He was famous.
I don't know.
Were you listening to that, or had you tuned out in your studio there?
I was listening and realized that it says here January 31st, but they were talking about last year, so...
Oh. Yeah. Well, it's a good thing we're talking about time being an illusion, so it really doesn't matter.
Yes, exactly.
You know what's really cool? That your show here is Synchronicity, which is a great concept, and Synchronicity really... is what we've been talking about. It's really the acceptance of understanding that things are being guided from a higher place, that whatever seems to happen, everybody, every encounter that we have is not by accident. The Course in Miracles talks about that very specifically. And a lot of it's just how we choose to see it. Do we choose to see the reality? It's almost like the Matrix, you know, to see the truth behind the illusion. When you pass someone on the street, or and you just have a glance, or maybe just smile at someone in passing. You're Canadian, I'm sure you smile all the time. I'm sorry, forgive me, but I mean it complimentarily. When you do, I mean, I've had experiences like that where you just happen to catch someone's eye and you have a nice little pleasant smile with each other. That's not random. That's not a random thing. That's synchronicity in action. There was a reason for that, and it connects your consciousness, or what you perceive as your own consciousness, which is really shared with everyone. We all are one, you know, at that higher level. And when little seemingly insignificant things happen, or big ones, you have a car accident, or someone, you know, takes a fall, falls down in front of you, and you help them up, or, you know, those are more obvious, because we go, oh, you know, I was at the right place to help that person, or they to help me. But even the little seemingly insignificant things, it's that letting go, letting the ego mind would tell you, oh, just keep going, just walk on your own, where spirit says, no, you know, take that moment, open your mind, open your smile and your helping hand to someone else, even if it's just a quick smile. That sometimes is all that it takes. You don't know, that person may have been having the worst day of their life, and that little smile you gave them may have turned it completely around for them. I have seen that happen. So, you know, I think we should, when we get into that synchronicity mindset, we just see things and opportunities like that, opportunities for greater peace and expressions of love, and we see that constantly. So it's really great that you have named your show itself after that. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Well, Gene, you were talking earlier about quantum physics and the Large Hadron Collider.
I think the Hadron or Haldron or the CERN Hadron. Over CERN, which is... French words that I don't know, yes. But it has to do with that thing. Yeah.
So I'm going to be playing that song, because some of the scientists got together and made a rap and put it up on YouTube.
No kidding.
So I'm going to play that at the end of the hour, which leaves us not much time.
Okay.
So I want to give you an opportunity to let us know what's the most important message that you want to get across today about your book, A Golf Course in Miracles.
I think if there is one central message, it would be that peace is always an option, and it's always an option that's open to us at any moment. And that sounds kind of deep and kind of, yes, brothers and sisters, peace is, you know, it's rather dry in that sense, where our book is pretty dynamic and funny, and there is no difference with that. Peace can be joyous. You know, your calm state of peace can be the most ecstatic experience that you've ever had, and actually will be and is when we open ourselves to that. But I think the central message, if anything else, would be that we can always, you know, because A Course in Miracles, and our book talks about this as well, and A Golf Course in Miracles, the miracle that's being referenced is not the parting of the Red Sea. It's not the curing of cancer. It's not the financial turnaround in your moment of need. I mean, those things seem miraculous, and Charlotte and I kind of, on our program, we usually refer to those as earthly miracles. They do seem miraculous. They may have a miraculous source behind them, and it is just, wow, it's wonderful when stuff like that happens. And I won't go into it here, but I went through a personal medical crisis not long ago, and one could say absolutely it was a miracle that I'm here talking with you. That's a whole separate show. Well, we'll come back on that one. Medical miracles with Gene and Marie. but the real miracle, as A Course in Miracles presents it, is the shift in perception. It's the change of thought. The Course tells us that in any given situation, whenever things boil down to what should I do now, or I'm upset about something, or how do I process this, the answer is always choose again. Choose to see it differently. And we always have that open to us. We can always choose for peace. We can always choose for a peaceful outcome to any situation. Again, whether it's a medical emergency, financial, relationship, whatever it may, or a bad hole on the golf course, God help us all, whatever it might be, a bad hockey shot. Okay, I'm just trying to make it relevant. But whatever it may be, we can always choose again. And kind of the question is, how quickly are we going to choose that? Are we going to stay angry for years or lifetimes? Are we going to stay angry for a couple of days or a couple of hours? Or are we going to turn it around in a half an hour or 15 minutes or 5 minutes? or right now. We can always choose again. And so that would be the central message, both of A Course in Miracles and, as presented humorously, in A Golf Course in Miracles, is peace is always an option. We can always choose again and choose for greater peace. So I think that would be the central core of pretty much everything we're saying.
Wonderful. Thank you, Gene. And just one more chance to let people know how they can contact you.
Well, a variety of ways. I'll just go down the list quickly. For me, it would be GeneBogart.com is my own website. Charlotte McGinnis, and she spells her name MCGINNIS. Not like the other Guinness that I'm somewhat familiar with, but no, it's CharlotteMcGinnis.com. And I believe she's at ConsciousConversations.tv. But for the book itself, which is really the main place for people to go, it is simply AGolfCourseInMiracles.com, or the shorter acronym, AGCIM.com. And you can purchase the book right there as well. We do have a discount, a special discount code if you buy it through our website. And we have some wonderful bonus gifts. You know how that happens nowadays when people have a book to promote. They have some associated authors and other people that are happy to endorse the product. And they have some downloadable gifts, audio products, recordings, PDF, ebook type things. We have seven different ones now, including some different stuff from Charlotte and I. And my good buddy, I got to say hi to Gary Renard, who is a best-selling author of The Disappearance of the Universe and Your Immortal Reality. Gary was very kind enough to write the foreword, both humorous and enlightening, a foreword for our book. And he also has a guided meditation recording that he has, and that's one of the download gifts that you'll receive if you buy A Golf Course in Miracles from our website. It's also available at Amazon and other places, and that's fine. But if you want to get it from the source people themselves, go to AGolfCourseInMiracles.com, get the discount and the package of bonuses as well. So thank you for letting me share that, Marie.
Great. Thank you so much, Gene. Well, have a wonderful day and happy golfing.
Well, thank you. I may take it up after a while. You know, I always say quickly, the only golf that I really play these days involves windmills and dinosaurs. But, you know, we'll see about the larger courses for me after that.
Okay.
But Charlotte is the golfer, as we said. You'll both learn about golf and learn about a little bit about spirit and finding peace. But thank you for having me. I hope we get to chat again, Marie. You're a wonderful host. And on your website, people should go to spiritualshow.com and see your adorable picture as well. So
aww,
thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Gene. Have a great day. Take care. Be well.
You too. Bye-bye.
Namaste. So that was Gene Bogart. He is one of the co-authors of A Golf Course in Miracles. And coming up next in just a few minutes is Parts Unknown. So stick around for that here on CITR. And keeping in line with the whole quantum physics thing, here is the Large Hadron Wrap by the lovely scientists and folks at CERN. So I will see you next week. Take care, be well, namaste.
Oh, yeah. I'm about to drop some particle physics in the club. The LHC is super duper fly. You know what I'm saying. Check it.
Underground, designed with mind to send protons around. A circle that passes through Switzerland and France. 60 nations contribute to scientific advance. Two beams of protons being round through the ring they ride. Till in the hearts of the detectors that made it collide. And all that energy packed in such a tiny bit of room becomes mass. Particles created from the vacuum. And then...
oh, yeah.
LHCBEC is where the antimatter's gone. Alice looks at collisions with a lead ion. CMS and Atlas are two of a kind. Particles they can find. The LHC accelerates the protons and the lead, and the things that it discovers will rock you in the head. We see asteroids and planets, stars galore. We know a black hole resides in each galaxy's core. But even all that matter cannot explain what holds all these stars together. Something else remains. The star matter interacts only through gravity. And until you catch a particle, there's no way to see. Take it back to conservation of energy, and the particles appear as clear as can be. You see particles flying in jets they spray, but you notice there ain't nothing. The other way. You said my law has just been violated. That don't make sense. There's gotta be another particle to make this balance. And it might be dark matter. And for the first time, we catch a glimpse of darkness from most of the known verse because. Evil twin.
your shell, cause when it meets its normal twin, they both annihilate. Matter turns to energy and then it dissipates. The matter is created from energy, which is exactly what they'll do in the LHC. You get matter and antimatter in equal parts, and they try to take this back to when the universe starts. The Big Bang, back when all the matter exploded, but the amount of antimatter was somehow eroded, because when we look around, we see that matter abounds, but the antimatter's nowhere to be found. That's why.
Deceased females, also wearing lingerie. He positioned their arms in a sexy embrace. Down the hall, a man holding a chainsaw stood over the motionless body of a sixth woman lying on a table covered in plastic. These are scenes from a popular music video by a Grammy Award-winning artist. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like entertainment? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
Ethiopian Summer Festival, one of the most talked about annual events in Burnaby, is back again for the ninth time. On July 21st and 22nd, the Swan Guard Stadium will be a place you do not want to miss. There will be healthy Ethiopian cuisine, the famous Ethiopian coffee ceremony, entertaining games for adults and children, a soccer tournament, and much, much